This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
2 hours in the books. Having a good time here on the show, yeah, although some very serious stuff to talk about. The Knicks clinched the playoff spot, which means that they're either going to be two through six. They're not going to be in the play-in. And they clinched without playing last night. So they're making back-to-back postseason appearances for the first time since a three-year streak from 2011 through the 13th. Now, the Bucks, without Giannis, they beat the Magic last night. So the Knicks are a game and a half behind the Bucks for second, which might be better off if they can finish third and play the Pacers and avoid the 76ers or the Heat. Now, we talked about this yesterday. We're not saying that they should lose. We're just trying to say what would probably be better for them.
That's all. But and besides, it's a moot point anyway. There's no way a Thibodeau team is going to tank. They're going to go out and try to finish as high as they can and win every game that they can.
Now, Bucks are in second right now, so they'll play the Thunder or the Magic. That's who they have left, the Thunder and the Magic, and both of those games are away. The Knicks are in the number three spot. They're at the Celtics tonight, then at home against the Nets, at home against the Bulls. The Celtics, the Cavaliers are the fourth team. They're playing the Pacers and the Hornets at home. The Magic, three games back. They're playing at Philly, then the Bucks. The Pacers are playing at the Cavaliers and then the Hawks at home. The 76ers with the seventh spot, they're playing at home against the Magic and the Nets. And then the Heat, five games back, playing the Raptors and the Raptors again, both in Miami.
Hmm.
So that's where we stand.
Lillard currently is doubtful for the Bucks, by the way.
Lillard and no Giannis. And did you see what the Celtics did? They signed Jrue Holiday. Four-year deal.
I mean,
$135 million.
So I guess the back to Marcus Smart plan. By the way, and Smart ended up hurt this year.
Mm-hmm.
Was pretty ineffective for Memphis. They end up getting Jrue Holiday and Chris. I mean, you got to give credit to Brad Stevens where it's due, man. Those moves. Obviously the Celtics are truly. I mean, Michael, you think Yankees fans are championship or bust? Have to imagine the Celtics base this year is truly championship or bust. But you got to give credit where credit is due. The moves they made this offseason were special.
And there was a great story in The Athletic about Porzingis, how the Mavericks, when he was with the Mavericks, they said, this guy, we can't have him in the low post. It's not worth it having him take those shots in a three-point league. And the team that really unlocked him was Washington.
Mm-hmm.
On how to use him and how to use him effectively. And the Celtics noticed that and made the trade. And they are very aware analytically of how he helps them.
Yeah, and then of course the Wizards were in the middle of a rebuild anyway, so they go grab him, and here we are.
So that's the Knicks story. And again, they'll play tonight on 98.7. That's against the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
The Rangers, Islanders, and Devils don't count, they're out. They're playing tonight. Where do we stand? What's going on? Who has to win? Islanders are the ones that were still dubious whether they'll make it. Looks like they will, but we'll see.
And the Islanders are in Montreal tonight. Montreal just came off a 9-3 win over Philadelphia, but if you want to fancy yourself a playoff team, win tonight at the Bell Center, and you control your own destiny there. Rangers have a 3-point lead on both Carolina for the division and Boston for the conference. Boston and Carolina are idle tonight. You know, so the Rangers win two games, they lock it up. The Rangers, tonight against Philadelphia, Saturday afternoon at home against the Islanders, Monday night at home against Ottawa. The Hurricanes are at the Blues, at the Blackhawks, at the Blue Jackets. Kind of figure Carolina's going to win out.
Right.
Although St. Louis could be a tough game because St. Louis is still mathematically alive in the West. Boston at Pens, at Caps, home against the Sens. So, listen, the Pens need the game way more than Boston does. So I would think Boston's got a little bit of a tougher schedule, but the Rangers take care of business. Beat Philadelphia tonight, they're reeling. And if you win one of the two games to close out the season against the Islanders or the Senators, you're going to, in all likelihood, win the conference and probably win the President's Trophy, too. So the Rangers control their own destiny. They're in good shape. They're going with the same lineup tonight that they had against the Islanders on Tuesday, with the exception of Jonathan Quick. Looks like he's going to get the start. And the Islanders are, like I said, in good shape.
Do we know who the Islanders are starting in goal yet? Have they announced it?
No, they probably did. Let me take a look. I'll see. I don't know if Anthony had seen it. I thought maybe it would be... Sorokin, yeah. Who's in goal for the Islanders, did you see? Oh, okay, so it's goal. He's going to go with Sorokin on Saturday against the Rangers, and he's going to start Varlamov tonight in Montreal. So go with the hot hand there, and we'll see what goes. But again, you control your own destiny. That's the thing that you want. You win, you're in. And that's what the Islanders have going for them.
All right, the Yankees yesterday, they lose a game, 5-2. They battled back. They threatened in the ninth inning where they had the bases loaded, Aaron Judge at the plate, and he hits a fly ball to center field. Yankees still have the best record in baseball, and now they go on the road. Today they're off. They'll travel to Cleveland, three games against the Guardians, and then three games in Toronto against the Blue Jays. So that's where the Yankees stand right now. One thing I got to tell you all, I don't know how many people watched the game yesterday. I have never, ever, in the 38 years covering baseball, 5 years as a writer, ever seen a guy who is more exciting and more scintillating working a walk. It's unbelievable. Soto is unbelievable. Mm. I mean, it becomes like a dynamic thing. The way he approaches every pitch, he's such an expert of the strike zone, and it doesn't seem like big moments, you know, bring him down at all. He had a big double yesterday to give the Yankees their second run, and then with two outs and runners on first and second in the bottom of the ninth inning, he works a walk and passes the baton to Judge. So he won't expand his strike zone. Now, that sometimes it's been a knock on him. You know, in big moments, you have to expand your strike zone. But, Don, not when Aaron Judge is hitting behind you.
No.
Just get on base. Pass the baton. He is something else.
When exactly is it a bad thing for you to get on base, even in a one-run game with Judge hitting behind you? And yeah. I know Judge is struggling. He's batting 250 or whatever. Mm-mm. But
175. Stanton's hitting 250.
It's going to come around. It's going to be something you want. And I'm sorry. I don't want my batter going against how he approaches things. Now, if it's on the corner, Michael, and you're struck out looking, yeah, you want to see him swing, but he's going to get his pitch. He's going to hit it. If he doesn't get it, he's going to walk. And I can't imagine with Judge and Stanton coming up after him that you're ever going to look at that as a bad thing. Now, if Judge ends up hitting 175 the rest of the season, then maybe you're going to have to make an adjustment. And if that happens, then it probably would be a shakeup in the order anyway. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. Get on base and pass the baton. That's always when the Yankees are at their best, Michael, when they're making starting pitchers work and they're passing the baton.
Don, can we please, I mean, I beg you to do this all the time. Can we give the Mets some love? That was a big win today.
Well, again,
they
where's
won two
the
out
game?
Of three.
Where was the Met game today?
It was on TV.
Right, and where is it on TV?
On SNY.
And where is it on SNY in the studio? But parked behind the light. Why do I always get that? Why does that always happen to me? I just want to know. You got the Masters right there next to the clock for Peter.
I love it.
You might as well have it sitting in his lap. And then the Mets are always behind the light.
But you know they won.
But I did. I listened on the way in. And I watched it with Brownshire Studio. Had some nice lunch. And they
enjoyed yourself like gentlemen.
You had lunch with Brownshire?
I ate
lunch. Did he
pay? No, I went to his studio.
Okay.
Because I didn't think the Fordham kids need to watch me eat.
And they watch me eat.
And me too.
Well, I didn't.
But you're classy.
So I went in there and I watched the Mets with Brownshire. We listened to some music together. Oh, and then I came in here and looked at a light with half the TV. But they were up 12 by, what was it, 10-3 at that point.
So now, rest assured, everybody. Rest assured. Don's not missing anything now because once the Met game was over, we turn off SNY because there's nothing on at this time that we'd be interested in seeing.
Nothing.
Not anything anyone
watch.
I think
most people feel that way.
If only if you look at the evidence.
I got a hankering to see Grizzly Adams for some reason, but I can't figure out why.
Oh, I'll talk about a guy with a beard.
Don's beard.
You got to explain it to him. No jokes are funny when you got to be explained.
I know. And Don's beard is
Shecky
organized.
Shecky Green didn't have an interpreter standing next to him on the stage. People laughed. If you don't know Shecky Green, Wikipedia. I like the fact they took 2 out of 3 because the game that they got rained out yesterday is going to be made up in September. So you follow up the embarrassment of the 0-5 start to the season by taking 2 out of 3 from Cincinnati. You take 2 out of 3 from the Braves. You get decent starting pitching tonight, but you haven't all season. But now the bats are starting to warm up a little bit. This team is going to go as far as the bats take them. Would you agree with that? Bullpen's not great.
No.
You don't agree with that?
No. They have to get better. It's only going to go as far as the pitching. I assume that.
But that's what I'm saying is they're going to have to get carried by their offense. until Senga comes back. Maybe. They just don't have the starting pitching, Michael. They're not going to survive unless they bludgeon teams like they did today. You're not going to get any length until Senga comes back. I mean, Quintana's good. And listen, they might get better. But right now, they've been able to survive because they've been able to hit now recently. That's what's turned them around in Cincinnati. And in Atlanta, they've been able to hit the ball. So, and then, Michael, they almost swept the series. They came back from 6-0 down, made it 6-5. And the Braves have kind of like the Houston Jays, right? That's a team that's always been a problem for the Mets, the way the Astros have been a problem for the Yankees. Although the Astros aren't winning, Michael. Hey, they lost again today, I think.
To Kansas City, and Kansas City's playing the Mets this weekend. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, you look at it and think that should be easy, but you know, it may not be. But I'm not trying to diminish what the Yankees have done. But you take a look at what Houston's record is, the Diamondbacks, and we know the Marlins are awful. You know, so you were impressed by what they did against the team you could never beat and against the defending National League champions, but maybe you caught those teams at the right time.
But then you beat, the Blue Jays. I mean, you're beating everybody. Right. They didn't make the schedule up.
Michael, I got to tell you, as much as the Astros own the Yankees, the Yankees own the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays just cower in the presence of the Yankees. Am I wrong, Peter? And I like the Blue Jays. I like the Blue Jays to do well. But in any big spot with the Yankees, when do they come up?
Not in a long time.
You got to go back to like Dave Stewart and Cito Gaston.
I was going to say, how's Cito? Joe Carter?
Yeah, you got to go back, Michael.
All right, let's not go back. But the Yankees will go to Cleveland to play the Guardians. The Mets are going to get the... Anthony, you know who we should have on tomorrow? See if you agree with me. Sunday is Dwight Gooden Day. I think we have to have Doc on.
I would love to have Doc on.
Yeah.
Can you make that happen?
Let's do that, Anthony. Could we do that?
I'll put in an ask.
And also, I'd like to get Robert Shapiro on, the one of the last remaining people alive that was part of the OJ defense.
Wow, that's right. Strong. Between, Shapiro and Dershowitz.
I don't think he could get Dershowitz. That's why I didn't ask.
Really?
Yeah.
You think he gets Shapiro's only 81.
Only 81.
I'm sure he's very spry.
Yeah. He was kind of pushed out, though, by Cochran, because he was the lead attorney.
He was.
Yeah. What a mess. OJ Simpson passed away, prostate cancer. It's such a complicated story. A great football player at USC, great football player with the Bills, but his whole legacy is what happened on that night in 1994. Now, a jury of his peers found him not guilty in a civil trial. He was found guilty. And if you even forget about that, then the stuff he did with the memorabilia where he actually did go to jail.
Yes, he did.
The second act of his career was movie star and broadcaster. The third act of his career completely ruined the other two acts.
It's just so sad for us, Michael, and even Peter to a certain extent, that there are so many people that are important in our lives and our listeners that weren't old enough to remember any of this happening. It's crazy. It's kind of like JFK for us. I wasn't alive and you were one or two, right? So it's a big moment in this country's history, and there's a lot of people that don't remember it. And so you kind of have to, it's left to us to describe what was going on there. And he was just, there wasn't anybody that didn't know O.J. Simpson. And I remember there being people that knew O.J. Simpson that thought he was a basketball player. Like the football player wasn't even the reason why they knew him. They knew him from the Hertz commercials. They knew him from the Naked Gun movies. They knew him from just being a charismatic figure. And the comp that I come up with is like a Michael Strahan, who's like a very popular guy that has made himself a name in all different walks of life beyond his football career. That's what O.J. Simpson was able to do. And then he's accused of murdering his wife and his wife's friend or lover, however you want to describe it, in as brutal a fashion as possible. It's right out of a movie.
Insane.
And then he's in the Bronco, nobody knows what's going to happen. Is he running to Mexico? Is he going to kill himself? It's on national television where they actually interrupt the NBA Finals.
But this is, you're explaining exactly why it's getting the billing it's getting today. Because
it was a seminal moment in this country.
And if you were, and Don just explained it really well. Like if you were to explain to an alien why it's so crazy, you get why it became what it became.
I understand. But let's be honest. It is a thing because he was accused of murdering two people. If he had been just a football player, if he had never done that, would he be getting the attention it's getting?
No.
Now, if you want to give attention to the anniversary of the moment, but it's a little disturbing to me. I see his face and I see, his birth and his death, and I'm sorry, it's really difficult for me to celebrate this man.
Now, I usually don't read tweets from Geraldo Rivera, But he obviously covered the trial. This is what he wrote on X. I usually don't speak ill of the dead, but O.J. Simpson doesn't deserve that mercy. He was an enraged, obsessively jealous double murderer who hid his rage behind a mask of affability. He exploited our nation's racial divide to avoid being found guilty of the brutal slasher killings he perpetrated on Nicole Brown Simpson, his children's mother, and her friend Ronald Goldman. O.J. nearly decapitated them, then left town, only to skulk back via the infamous white Bronco 405 freeway car chase, ending in a downtown L.A. courtroom where a nearly all-black jury. When the killer's glove didn't fit, he was acquitted at the most sensational televised criminal trial in history. The diametrically opposed reaction in real time of the elated black community and the outraged white community to the verdict spoke more potently about America's racial divide than any thoughtful essay ever could.
Who wrote that?
Geraldo Rivera.
That's pretty well said. There always was a piece of incredible, there was so much irony in the OJ verdict. And as I got older, I understood more from, you know, friends and listening to people and their experience. I listened to people who explained to me why, even though they didn't really have any love for OJ, they took some satisfaction in seeing the shoe on the other foot. Right. And I understood that as I got older, I came to have a bit of an understanding of why that was. The irony in all of that, though, is that OJ was basically publicly sort of embraced in that moment by a large portion of the black community, a community that he had widely abandoned
right.
in his success.
That's what made it so weird.
He ran out, married the whitest woman on planet Earth. He was not Jim Brown, okay? This was not a hero of the community at all. And then, ironically, the black community, which is incredibly a forgiving community, particularly because people have a shared experience, and when they see someone get attacked, they go, well, we know that experience. They kind of took OJ back and said, gave him grace. And so it's layered with irony that we were so split as a nation, and I don't think any of it had to do with any particular fondness for OJ Orenthal James Simpson, the person. It was like this confluence of events, the Rodney King verdict, the sadness and anger around police brutality, the injustice and racism of the justice system towards black Americans, and then white people having this feeling of like, hey, I'm watching a trial, this feels unfair, and sort of getting a taste of that, I don't get it. It all just came together into this nasty stew, but very little was about the character of OJ, who I think most people, no matter how you felt at the time, I don't think anyone had a true fondness at that moment for OJ the man.
I think they OJ the personality was, he was,
oh,
people
prior,
were very fond
prior
of him
to 94.
That. Oh, yeah.
But I think as the trial unfolded and people started talking, I think people, you almost would have to be in complete denial to have actually believed this is an innocent man who's just wrong place, wrong time. I mean, we could look at other trials that have happened in U.S. history and go, oh, I have a lot of questions about that. The O.J. one, as we pointed out earlier, this was a guy who from the very beginning when he was on the run, it made no sense. If you had nothing to do with the death of your ex-wife, were they currently separated or divorced?
Separate.
So this is your estranged wife still. And she was nearly decapitated in brutal fashion. The idea that your gut reaction would be to go on the run rather than be immediately, and especially when you're someone who's that rich. If you were completely powerless, I could see a world in which you get scared. You go, oh my God, everybody knows that I was upset about her divorce and I'm this powerless person. They're going to think it's me. But you're O.J. Simpson. You're a national television star. You can afford every lawyer on planet Earth. Why would you go running? Why wouldn't you immediately go, I'm with the police. We're going to do everything we can to find this person.
But there are still people out there that contend that he didn't do it. And, you know, we have to report that he didn't do it because he was found not guilty by a jury of his peers. Now, he was found guilty in a civil trial, but there are a lot of people out there that have convinced themselves that he did it or he didn't do it. So I look back on that trial and I followed it so closely at the time. And I think that the people that were trying to prosecute him were inept. Marsha Clark was inept. The fact
Christopher
that they,
Darden?
Yeah. The fact that they let Johnny Cochran pulled the bloody glove. Of course, the glove shrunk. They were drenched in blood.
And I think he
couldn't fit his hand in there.
But I also think he had like a protective plastic over his hands too,
because he couldn't touch the evidence.
Right. So,
I mean, and the Bruno Malley shoes. And come on,
it was all a disaster. Did you watch the show when it was on a couple years ago?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, they paint the picture of it pretty well. It was a completely mismanaged trial. And you mentioned it earlier, the superpower attorneys that he had on his side.
Let me ask you this, because I don't want to say he's being honored, but the way it's kind of being covered is the death of a statesman.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
I felt like it this morning.
What did you hear though? Is it
no, but
because death of a statesman implies that it's really sad.
But I'm just you're putting
news.
Up his picture with the year he was born and the year he died. You're showing highlights of him as a football player. You're showing you know, footage from the movies he was in and the Hertz commercials.
But you're also seeing the chase.
But that's all part of it. But would it have gone this over the top if he had been found guilty?
I think so. You think it'd be any different?
I think if he died
in jail today, I think it would be a huge story still.
Yeah, but I think there would have been riots in the streets.
What do you mean? If he was found guilty? Oh, back then?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, probably.
Right. So then there would have been that kind of. I mean,
either way, it would have led to the same thing today, though.
Right.
No matter how you cut it, you can't deny that OJ was a seminal figure. Now, as I said earlier, and I'll say it again. If O.J. Simpson, just the football player and the actor, passed away, it would have been the top headline on the side of ESPN. One little thing, Hall of Famer Simpson dead at 76. And it would have been a story about it. And maybe in the NFL next season, we would have seen some stuff about it. Everything is because of this. But I think the only place I disagree with you on, Don, is I don't see them celebrating it. It's just you cannot.
I didn't say celebrate, but it does feel like there's an honor of the man. We lost O.J. Simpson
today.
But
Michael, how do you draw the line? It's not honor to me. It's huge news.
How did you cover when Charles Manson died?
Charles Manson wasn't one of the great celebrity stories of the century.
But we've admitted the coverage it's getting is because of the murders. If those murders didn't happen, you would cover it like any other former actor or athlete that passed away.
But you can't remove
it. It's on the bottom
that.
Line, you'd mention it.
But you can't remove what happened.
That's why it's getting as much play.
Right. It's Manson, if for lack of a better example, was only famous because of the murder part. OJ was beloved when that whole thing happened, so you can't sort of take one piece away.
It's hard to explain, but you know, watching this morning when the news broke, it bothered me.
What are they supposed to do?
Maybe it was just the coverage ABC had. I don't know. That's the coverage that I watch. I don't know. It just felt like it was a little bit much for me.
Here's the New York Times. The New York Times, above the fold, the very top right now, is Democrats hammer a simple attack on abortion. Donald Trump did this. It's just a Trump article about the election, some other stuff. Under that, there's a break. Picture of OJ with the gloves. Two articles. OJ Simpson, football star whose trial riveted the nation, dies at 76. Next one, OJ, made in America, made by TV. And it's an article in O.J. Simpson's life and trials. Television was a spotlight, a microscope, and a mirror, our TV critic writes. And it's about his effects on television. But none of them are saying all of it's about what he meant to America as a whole. Not that we lost a great man.
All right, we'll take a brief time out. Still have to talk about the Ohtani situation. Also, Anthony's showing off with all the WFUV students here because he booked Doc Gooden tomorrow for 4 o'clock.
Oh, look at that.
Well, they just cleared out. He did it.
There's still one kid.
By the way, this kid who stayed, he's the hustler of the group.
He's pretty sharp.
He's the one who's going for it. You can see it.
Is there? Can Yes get footage when they do a documentary on him in about 30 years?
What? The last FUV guy?
Yeah.
This is
how dedicated he was.
He wanted to keep hanging out.
When everybody left, he hung out. This is one of the reasons why he became the next Bob Costas.
I love it. Peter, tell us about BetterHelp.
Hey guys, Peter Rosenberg here for BetterHelp. And this message is brought to you by BetterHelp. Guys, your social battery, how's it doing? Is it drained? Do you have tons of energy? I know my energy can get drained after a few tough days, and it's hard to recharge at times, especially without any help. Especially if you've been dealing with real life stuff, whether that's personal loss, professional loss, relationship difficulty. Maybe you're looking to improve yourself in all of those regards. Maybe you're just looking for positive coping skills or how to set better boundaries, how to empower yourself. If you've been thinking about any of those things and you've been thinking about therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient. It's flexible and it's suited to your schedule. Fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your sweet spot, your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Peter today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Peter.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, the other big story that we've been talking about is that Ohtani's interpreter sounds like he's quite a schemer.
Well, and quite a gambler.
Yeah, the Times reported yesterday that prosecutors have uncovered evidence that Mizuhara may have stolen more money from Ohtani than the $4.5 million initially reported. We're hearing that he lost $140 million in bets. I mean, would an illegal bookie take that kind of loss from, I don't know, Steve Ballmer? I mean, I guess they would, but from some schlub? The money kept coming in. There's no way. 140. Now he won 101 million, but he lost 141 million. So he lost $40 million.
Michael, I don't know how illegal gambling works, but I would think a bookie would want to know, do you have this money? Like, do you walk in and say, and plop that money down on the table and say, I'm going to bet on the Bulls tonight? Or do you make a phone call and they back you, and then when you lose, they come looking for the money? When you're going about that much money, I need to know that you have this, man.
Alden Gonzalez of ESPN has in his story that investigators also relied on recorded phone calls from the bank in which Mizuhara falsely identified himself as Ohtani to trick and deceive bank employees into authorizing the transfers. Now, that makes no sense to me. I mean, if I would try to authorize any kind of big money thing, they'd be asking me questions about the name of my dog when I grew up. I mean, I don't get how this was allowed.
Because he probably had all this information because Ohtani just couldn't be bothered. Like, this guy was completely in control of Ohtani's life. So, you know, those questions like, what street were you born on? What was the name of your first dog? What was the name of your first school? He probably had all that information. Michael, how do you prove to a bank in a wire transfer that it's you, other than answering all the questions that were set up by Ohtani when he first opened the account? And if he had all that information, then of course he'd have access. But I don't care how rich you are, how do you not notice that money being gone? Unless you're just completely oblivious. And I guess that's the minimum of what Ohtani is guilty of. Being a rube.
Now, Andrew Brandt, a really smart lawyer who ran the Packers. So this, 47 minutes ago, he tweeted this out. Reading complaint, it says, Mizuhara called the bank and identified himself as Ohtani to authorize wire transfers from the account to people involved in an illegal gambling operation. Andrew goes, what? He just said, hey, this is Ohtani. I need to send a bookie millions. And the bank said, sure. It just doesn't
none of it adds
the
up.
Smell test.
We said this from the very beginning. No version of this seems like it can make sense with only one person being aware. In other words, how could his interpreter have access to this money?
How? So let's operate under the assumption that Shohei is completely innocent. Mm. And at this point, okay, we're going to operate right. under that assumption. The bank has to be sued by Shohei to get the money back because they let themselves be duped and they didn't have enough firewalls to actually stop this guy. All of his financial people must be let go.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to really question his agent, too. Well, how does this go on without any of you seeing it? And again, that doesn't pass the smell test either. Because usually when you're working for a big money guy and you see these weird things, you let it go by because he's your ticket. But if it's not Ohtani who's doing this, and you're seeing these millions of dollars leaving his account, at least you should be looking at it.
Makes no sense.
Don't they have to stop it or question Ohtani? Right. Hey, listen, Shohei, there's like $16 million gone from your account. Are you spending money at like 7-Eleven? What's going on here?
I guess if he says, don't worry about it, then I guess you don't worry about it.
So if it's just completely black and white,
right.
where he didn't say that, it doesn't pass the smell test. There's too many things that don't make sense.
Yes, that's just too much money to go out with anybody noticing it. Now, it was Shohei not gambling, but funding his friend's gambling problem?
Don't know.
Because the other thing that sends up a red flag for me, this is a gambling addict that made over 19,000 bets. Think about that. Peter joked about, geez, if he used promo code Peter, he'd be swimming in money right now. And not one baseball bet? Not one. You're in all kinds of trouble. You're hemorrhaging money through the eyes. You're not going to bet the one sport you know. You're only going to exclusively bet on things you don't know. Now, the answer might be, well, because he worked in baseball, didn't want to lose his job. Okay, that's an answer. But it's also an answer that says, hey, Shohei was funding his friend and told him, listen, I'll give you the money that you need because you're my buddy and I don't want you to get in trouble. I don't want to get your legs broken. But just promise me you're not going to bet on baseball, because if that gets back to me, I lose my job. Is that possible too? It's all on the table, Michael, because even if you don't believe Ohtani gambled, he still might have been funding his friend's addiction. And if the guy was so important to Ohtani, he might have been funding it just to be able to have the guy keep his job. But then ultimately, that's what ended up losing it in the first place.
Wild.
1-800-919-3776. Let's go to the phones. Brian in Millburn. Brian.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
I love your show.
Thank you.
I want to say to you, I'm a black man. All the white men in my company walk up to me and say, boy, damn.
Well, you're breaking up. You're breaking up.
You're breaking up.
We want to hear you, but you're breaking up.
Hello, you hear me?
Yeah, now you're good.
Thank you.
Okay, so they all walked up to me and said, hey, your boy died. You know, I don't like, you know, listen, I understand he might have did it, but nobody can't get on the radio and call him a murderer because he got judged by a jury of his peers and he beat it.
Agreed.
So I just don't understand. Well, yeah, he beat it.
Yeah, we didn't call him. We didn't call him a murderer.
No, not y'all. Not y'all. Not y'all. People that's calling the show. Not y'all. Yeah, keeping it real.
But you know what, Brian? There's a lot of people who think that he's a murderer.
Right, but in life, Brian, I mean, people are, I guess, entitled to their opinions, too. He lost the civil suit, so he was held responsible in some way for what happened to them. So,
how old are you, Brian?
46 years old.
So you lived through it.
I remember it all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, just I'm asking you to keep it real. You believe he didn't do it?
I don't know.
Well, why don't you tell Brian? How about just take us? Just curious, because we're three white guys here, and you're a black man. Take us through what were your feelings when the verdict came out back then in the
90s? Well, you know, as we was growing, my parents and them was like, well, good for him. That's what he get from running to, you know, marrying a white girl. Some of the community was.
Right.
I gotta be blunt with y'all. They was.
Right.
They wasn't that good for him, because we get tired of people getting money. Black people getting money, then all of a sudden they go marry a white woman. You in America, you can always marry who you want to marry, but why black people keep doing that?
So you're
that's
saying, so that was one attitude that people had, is kind of,
yes,
that's what he gets for,
yes,
that's what he gets for messing with a white woman. But what did you think about when he got off? Were you happy when he got off?
I was happy he was got off because they just let the police off with beating Rodney King on camera.
Yep.
I cannot forget about that.
Nope. You can't leave that out of the story. It happened right before.
They beat him. They had a Rodney. They beat him almost in an inch of his life, and they all got found now guilty. Because I always got to put that in the story. Because that definitely happened around the time that happened. So when he ran from the cops, nobody blacks was really saying that. Because we just seen what they did to Rodney King, and got found not guilty. Come on, y'all.
Right.
And to this day, they still have it. It's like people haven't let it go. The man's dead. Why people that's Caucasian in my company keep coming up to me, oh, your man died, your man died. Well, I remember the rich billionaire white kid who just killed four people in the car and got 10 years probation. There's nobody saying nothing about that.
Sure.
Yeah, I think, Brian, and thank you for the call, I think that was such a polarizing moment in America where the chasm between races was accentuated.
Right.
And I think that we have not recovered. And I think, if anything, it's accentuated more and more every day.
Now, what needs to be understood here, and I understand everything that Brian is coming from, and that was something that was a major point 30 years ago, is that the white person that gets off is kind of the same reason that OJ got off. Privilege. Sometimes privilege is the color of your skin. Sometimes privilege is the money you make. He got off because he was rich and he was able to get like five of the best lawyers on the planet to defend him. So sometimes it's color, sometimes it's money. And that's why he was able to get off. And that's the problem with the judicial system. If O.J. Simpson had been a bus driver making $20,000 a year, he'd be in prison right now.
Let's go to Mike in Plattsburgh. Mike.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How you doing, Mike?
Great job. I want to talk about Bob Costas in a minute, the interview. Did you guys see that in CNN today?
I heard about it because he kind of told the story you said about the...
Kevin.
Kevin.
Yeah.
And Bob said that the O.J. was calling looking for him.
Yeah, in the car.
So he told the same story, but just switched the names around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he didn't have a cell phone. I mean, there was no cell phones at that time. But he was calling him from the car, and then later, I guess he talked to him and said like he was trying to tell Bob that he didn't want to everybody to his legacy and his image was going to be destroyed about that. And I was hoping you get Bob Costas on today or tomorrow, pick his brain a little more about that because he looked very disturbed on CNN today.
Okay.
Really did.
I might do that.
But another thing I want to say is $250 million, guys, I would sleep with all of my wife's friends for that. Be honest. Come on.
but you know what? Don and Peter are very virtuous, Mike. They wouldn't do it because the guilt would kill them. It's not worth the $250. Now, I admit I would do it.
I know that. You know what? Have them do not quit Would You Wednesdays. Have Anthony be with you and me call me let them sit it out.
So for both of you, Don and I have to answer the way you want or we asked, would you, we said no.
Right,
and now we're eliminated.
You know what it is, and you're gonna argue I don't believe you guys,
but here's the
that's
thing.
Why
if the answer is so obvious, Peter, then why did he ask it in the first place?
You know what, it's 5:43. Is it too late for point God?
might be a little bit reason.
You're the voice of reason, Don. You're the voice of the fans. I love you, but Michael K is the man.
Thank you, Mike.
No disrespect for big time backs of the nature. Michael K is the man.
You know what? Yeah, it's hard for me to argue with you. It really is.
God love you.
Thank you.
God bless you.
I love you more. Well, there you go.
So the only answer was there was only one answer. I don't know why you asked.
Yeah,
but the reason why there is no more Would You Wednesday is for this reason. You guys have had a disturbing trend of having those types of answers over and over and over again.
So
it's not fun anymore.
And then the other thing he said as a reason why he's giving it up, Peter, after you left, was because he's tired of getting picked on.
And you know what?
And his questions
being
analyzed.
You brought up a great point. And I'm wrong about that because the fun of the top five list was me going, brutal.
Yeah, how could exactly.
You do that? Oh, okay. But I just don't believe you guys anymore. You're not angels. Okay. You've never been angels. And you give angelic answers.
But don't buy it. Isn't it possible?
No. That's not.
You're the one who brought up not angels.
Right.
Isn't it possible if we're not angels, I might have experience that leads me to knowing the answer and going, yeah, I know the answer I would give, and it would be no, I wouldn't do it. Possible?
No. No.
So even if I have experience in it and you don't, you still know more than
me. He's dug in.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. $250 million. You'd never have to do another podcast. Nothing.
But
nothing.
But I'd live with guilt the whole time.
Oh, poor you.
But you say that, but you've never lived with guilt, you choir boy. Some people have been in these streets. Some people have been out here before. And guilt's not that fun.
But I'd rather not. It's fun with a return of $250 million. You live with the guilt.
It's not.
You could shower Natalie with gift after gift. You'd get over the guilt.
I
Hope Diamond you could get
over. I don't think you get over guilt. You just learn to live with it and become a less happy person. That's how I believe guilt works.
Well, maybe because I'm not a happy person,
see?
I'm all right with it.
So just stack it on top of the other misery.
Hey, it's Michael K. I love when I get to talk about my friends at PC Richard & Son. It's a local company, family-owned. I trust them for my appliances, TVs, electronics, and a good night's sleep, too. Their experts use a four-step mattress fitting process to find you the right pillow, the right comfort, the right technology, and the right adjustable base so that your new bed fits you perfectly. They guarantee it. And free in-home delivery on all mattresses, $199 and up. So do what I do. Get to PC Richard & Son, the local company you can trust for your new mattress.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Point God.
You have made no good points, Peter.
You're so right, Michael.
I think you made some salient points.
Yeah, because you're an ass.
If I had any interest in leaving here, you know, whatsoever, I would probably just not be doing any media because I know you're going to ask that question.
Right, right.
If I had an interest in any other job, you know, I'd be hiding right now. And I'm going to be here. I love being here. I've got, like, the job that fits me the absolute best. UConn, Dave Benedict, the AD, and the school. You know, they're going to reward us, and then, you know, I think they're going to continue to provide us with the resources, you know, to keep going for these things here. So I'm gonna be going for these things here.
Oh, Michael's run's over.
Well, I asked a question, though.
That is true. If any of the three of us get it adjacently, it would be Michael.
Or so that's four in a row for me. I think this might be the best week anyone's ever had on the show in terms of point guard.
I'm almost rooting. Listen, I like him, but I'm now openly rooting for Danny Hurley to get the Kentucky job.
To prove
that
Michael
would really give us a lot of pub after what he just said, right?
He won't, though. He's mad at his wife.
I believe him.
I do believe him, too.
I like him, too. But again, if they offer him $12 million a year, that doesn't make him a bad guy if he says, you know what? I changed my mind. I'm going to Kentucky.
See, but you know what? He said something. He was on Jim Rome today, too, and he said something on Jim Rome that's interesting. He said, how much money is too much money? Now, that's not a question you asked me. He said, how much different is your life going to be with a couple of more million dollars a year? He says, I'm happy where I am. I have great support. People want me here. He said, what more do you want? It would be a spirited defense if he all of a sudden he goes to Kentucky and go, what were you saying?
Well, how much is he making now?
5.5, I think.
All right, so if
he'd probably get 8 in Kentucky.
Okay, so if he wants more money out of UConn, is UConn going to use like what he said? So, you know, you said that there's not really much of a difference, so we're going to give you $1 million.
I bet you that they're probably going to give him more money. They know what they have. They have the best coach in college basketball right now.
They do.
The best. Best, Jerry.
After having one of the best before him. I mean, they've done a good job.
Well, nice Kevin Ollie was in the middle. Although he did win a title.
That is true. And then before him, so they've been all right.
Michael in Red Bank. Michael.
Hey, guys.
What's going on?
Well, I am a longtime listener, first-time caller, and when I found out that I was going to talk to you guys, man, my adrenaline run, because I'm such a fan of all three of you.
Oh, thank you,
Michael.
So I just wanted to share a little bit of my OJ narrative. At the time of the trial, I was on the longest running show in broadcast history. And when that
what
when
was
that
the show?
Bronco went down, it was The Guiding Light.
Oh, okay.
That's a big show.
Yeah. And when the Bronco went down the highway and our show got interrupted, you know, everybody ran to the TV sets. And just to give a little historical perspective, there was no cable at that time. It was ABC, NBC, CBS, and that was it.
There was cable in 94, but not to the extent that we have it now. Because there was ESPN, wasn't there?
Yeah, of course.
There was already 24-hour news.
But there was, when you turn on the TV during the day, there was basically, you know, the major networks were kind of where everybody went to watch content. Correct me if I'm wrong, Michael. I could be off on that, but
I understand.
But also, I hate to mess up your story, but also this happened at night. It was Friday evening. Wasn't it already during the playoff games? Yeah. Everything had already started.
Yeah, NBA Finals.
The Finals.
Are you just talking about the trial itself?
Or do you mean the trial?
The trial, everything about it.
Okay.
And the point I'm trying to make here is that at the time, soap operas were thriving. And once that trial hit, an actor turned to me and goes, I think this is the end of us. And because that was the sort of, as we've all sort of discussed it, that was sort of the onset of reality TV sort of the beginning and of the end for us. Because our ratings just went off the cliff after that happened, because our show kept getting interrupted continuously. And the ratings started going down, salaries started being cut, actors started getting fired. And at that time, there may have been 14 or 15 soap operas. I think there are three left now.
It's All My Children, Young and the Restless, and Bold and Beautiful, right? That's what's left?
No, General Hospital.
And Days Are Alive, so that's four.
Well, there's four.
Okay.
And there was 18 when I started in 1983.
Wow. That
tells you how old I am. Yeah. And, but the other part too of this, too, is just, you know, as Peter was so beautifully describing the narrative of what happened, it really brings up the vitriol of his passing, kind of reminds me of what it felt like back in that day, the racial divide and the animus that was sort of permeating, you know, even between the actors.
Yeah, and you know what? I think unfortunately, Michael,
were you an actor?
It continues to the. I'm sorry, he's gone. It continues to this day in other ways, shapes, and forms.
I was just looking at Guiding Light. I was wondering if
look for Michael.
I was going to ask if he was Michael O'Leary. Oh, he was. It was Dr. Rick Bauer.
Dr. Rick. That's kind of like Dr. Drake Ramore. You know who that is?
Of Dr. Drake Ramore. That'd be the Matt LeBlanc character on
Very
Friends.
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's because of your wife, because you never even looked at
Friends
before.
I might have remembered that prior.
Good for you.
Might have.
ENN's coming up in just a moment. It's going to be interesting to see what we get on ENN. I talk for a living. Whether I'm in the studio or at the ballpark, I'm sure to have a cup of Bigelow tea by my side. There's nothing like fueling my voice, body, and soul with only the finest tea, Bigelow Earl Grey. This delightful blend of black tea and real bergamot oil is not your ordinary tea. It's a broadcaster's dream come true. Keeps me energized and focused throughout the broadcast, ensuring I deliver nothing but the best for my loyal listeners. So join the millions of fans that make Bigelow Tea number one in New York. Bigelow Tea, the official hot tea of the New York Yankees.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.